You are listening to The Roundtable with Gabriel Joseph Shadar, debating the big issues. The Roundtable, about the nation, across the nation. Radio Mirai.
Hello and welcome to Radio Mirai Roundtable Debate. I'm Gabriel Joseph Shadar. Today, I discuss with my guests in the studio the issue of managing unity in diversity in South Sudan, with focus on the federal system. We remember that the parties to the peace talks in Addis Ababa have since last year agreed on federal system or federalism as a system of governance for South Sudan. The details of the nature and setup of the proposed federalism are yet to be explained, as the system might mean different things to different people. It's also clear from the literature of political discourse of South Sudan and of Sudan that federalism has been among the essential demands of South Sudanese for a long time, but also with different connotations. Today, we explore what federalism means in practice for a country like South Sudan. We'll try to argue about what challenges come with any proposed system of federalism. I welcome my guests to this debate, Dr. Luka Byongdeng, the director of the Center for Peace and Development Studies at the University of Juba. Welcome, Doctor. And I welcome Dr. Douglas Johnson, well-known author and writer on South Sudanese issues, and he's now fellow of the Rift Valley Institute. Welcome, Dr. Douglas Johnson, once again on Radio Mirai.
Thank you.
And I welcome also for the first time Dr. John Young, who is a researcher. He's written also a very interesting book about the complications of the CPA in South Sudan and Sudan, of course. Welcome, Dr. John Young.
Thank you.
And I welcome Mr. Peter Justin Hakim, a researcher from the African Studies Center in the Netherlands. Welcome.
Thank you.
Well, to start with, I asked Dr. Luka Byong to give his opinion in just a few minutes about what is meant by federalism for the common person. And if I can put it, put the question in another way, why should a federal system be implemented, or what will come with a federal system?
Yeah. Thanks, Gabriel. I think we in the Center for Peace and Development Studies, we have this conference. It is exactly these are the questions we want to ask. To what level, whether federalism will be a vehicle with which we can achieve unity and diversity, bringing peace and sustainable and equitable development. And I think in a very simple way, federalism is how you distribute powers at different levels of government. And these powers are distributed through constitutional arrangement. So it's not a decision by the central government to devolve powers at that level. But it should be arrangement through a constitutional process. So each level should know these are the powers. And the whole debate is, should it make a difference? That's your question. I will follow it up later on. We have found that many, a lot of research and a lot of research has shown that the federalism may perform than unitary system, because unitary system is that all the powers are centered at the center, at the national level, and then this national level now will be devolving powers according to its wish, and it can withdraw those powers. Unlike federalism that devolves through constitutional arrangement, so even the central government should not have a power to withdraw, to take back these powers. And that's basically the main differences. I think the real question from this conference is, should it make a difference, really? Because, and I see you'll see later on, and I think my colleagues will come on, it is how much of powers have we devolved to the lower level? Mm-hmm. And when we talk about federalism, you are talking about three things at the same time. You have a political federalism, and then you have administrative federalism, and then you have physical federalism. And these are the things that should be, to what level this system of government will reach the people at the lower level. And that's why most of the debate, and there's almost an agreement, that unitary system may not be good in not only pushing services to the people, but even in terms of managing diversity. And federalism tends to provide opportunities and a space and framework for managing diversity and pushing resources down to the people. But as you will discuss later on, that it depends on the context of South Sudan.
Dr. Douglas Johnson, the demand for federalism is not a new thing, according to your arguments and your papers you have been presenting. Can you tell us why exactly South Sudanese have been arguing about this issue of federalism?
Well, the central political dilemma for Sudan before independence and since independence is how would South Sudan fit into a united country? And of course, that debate over time expanded to how do other parts of Sudan fit into a united country. And prior to independence, there was the growing political consciousness among South Sudanese, a growing dissatisfaction and with the dominance of the Northern Sudanese political parties of government, and the call for federalism came as a result of the failure of parliament in the center to come up with a solution for how South Sudan would be an integral part of a united country. And the call for federalism, beginning just before independence and going, continuing right through the First Civil War and beyond, was a call for greater local control of administration and of local economies, of resources. So it meant different things at different times. Unfortunately, I think during the 1980s, it took on a rather tribalistic tone when the call for regionalism within the southern region was really focused in Equatoria as a way of expelling other South Sudanese from Equatoria. And that is, I think, one of the things that is returning to the debate about federalism in South Sudan now. And I have some concerns about the current debate. One is that I think that if a system of federalism came out of negotiations within the factions of the SPLM and was imposed on the country, that this would not work. I'm also concerned about a federalism that is parochial and chauvinistic and based on an idea of some essential tribal or regional identity, which would not see other South Sudanese as full citizens if they're outside of their home area. The nation has to build itself. It has to build national institutions, and it has to build cooperation between regions. If there is to be a federal system, that the components of the federal system have to be economically viable as well as administratively stable. And I think that this requires a national debate rather than a debate just between elites.
Yeah. Thanks, Dr. Douglas Johnson, for your point. I move now to Dr. John Young. Dr. John, you have done a research and your paper about the federal system in Ethiopia. And you are saying just briefly that the federal system in Ethiopia, which is an ethnic federalism, might be appropriate for a country like South Sudan. Can you just explain briefly what do you mean here?
No, actually, I didn't say it would be appropriate. I said
a question. You raised a question.
I raised the question. A question. Of it,
yeah.
And I think there is a lot to learn from the Ethiopian experience, both negative and positive. But I think one of the key messages there, and it undermines, I think, a lot of the criticisms of notions of federalism, and that is it's basically the central state which creates ethnic consciousness and ethnic conflict. It's not the other way around. It's not that ethnic groups per se pose a threat to the central state. It's the central state, by not being democratic, by not embracing the various peoples of the country, that creates the ethnic consciousness in the peripheral areas and leads to this kind of conflict. So the Ethiopians were responding to that. If you look at the Ethiopian state that was challenged by the Tigray People Liberation Front and now the present army, the Ethiopian People Revolutionary Democratic Front. It's a big mouthful there. They were challenging a state which was analogous to the Khartoum state of the old Sudan, where you had an edifice either of an Arabs and Islamic state, or in the case of Ethiopia, an Amara Ethiopian Orthodox state of a feudal kind of character that imposed its identity on all of the people. So this coalition in Ethiopia came together to challenge that state. And it worked, obviously. They came to power, and then they created these ethnic-based states, devolved power to them, and went to an extreme that you don't see in any other country, in the sense that what they did was in the Constitution, believable or not, they gave these ethnic communities the right to actual secession. But they did it with the idea of undermining ethnic consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Your point about what creates ethnic consciousness seems to be opposing the general understanding that ethnic consciousness comes before national consciousness.
Yeah.
And people are more aware about being this group and that group than more aware of being... But how come the state is feeding that thing?
Again, I don't think people develop ethnic consciousness to the point of making political demands or coming together in a political way, much less a military way, unless they feel that they have been denied access to the state. That's when that comes about. And the feature, again, is one of a lack of democratic engagement in the central state. And that's where these demands of federalism come about. We're not talking about federalism at this conference in some kind of abstract way. We're talking about it because there's a crisis of governance in South Sudan right now. People don't feel comfortable with the existing arrangements, and they're entertaining various ideas. But federalism, and I think everybody here agrees, is certainly no panacea. And to talk about federalism doesn't really get you very far as such, because there's many ways of dealing with federalism. There's many different models of federalism.
Thank you very much, Dr. John Young. I give Mr. Peter Justin Hakim, you have done a research also about the system of governance in South Sudan, and you narrowed down to areas in Equatoria, and you have seen the setup now, what it has led to at the moment. What can you tell us briefly on that thing?
Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity, and my contribution actually to the conference, the paper I developed, was basically to analyze the existing structure and how that can relate to a federal system of governance in case the people of South Sudan choose to go that way. Of course, as we are aware, at independence, South Sudan inherited 10 states, which are divided down to lower levels of government in terms of counties, payams, and bomas. My main focus was to see, for example, relations between creation of these units and the conflict. And of course, as the theme of the conference says, also the question of diversity and ethnicity is central to this. And actually, the emphasis of the paper is to see, for example, how the creation of these units can contribute to conflicts or peaceful coexistence. And based on field evidence, for example, we find that the structures we have actually are built on different interventions of the past, whether by the colonial authorities or the government in Sudan, and even during the wartime, where, for example, in 1994, SPLM came up with the structures of governance building on the county Payam Boma system. Our analysis was to see, for example, how does that contribute to peace or conflict? And evidence suggests that actually there are a lot of confusion in terms of, for example, we have created these institutions. Where are the borders? How do you negotiate borders? And how can a different or given community, for example, claim ownership of a given area? And from the findings, actually, what's very unfortunate is the fact that ethnicity is being used. Ethnicity is being used as a way, actually, for claiming territories, and which, to some extent, actually reflects the level, the increase in conflict shortly after the signing of the CPA, we've been witnessing cases whereby communities which we have never heard of fighting along conflict along ethnic line was happening. And basically, that was the focus of the paper. And relating it to the debate on federalism, actually, our argument in that paper, the paper actually, Lodge de Frisco authored with me, that's why I'm saying our argument, is that, of course, with the current debate now, we have a number of options, including, for example, if we go federal, we can have the 10 states, or we can go for the 21 states proposed by IO, or we have another option which is also being debated, which is going back to the three greater regions. But then based on our analysis, for example, one of the conclusions we came up with, creating federal states along ethnic line is not going to be a solution for South Sudan. So if there is a way to avoid it, we should go for that. And as a result, actually, we recommended that maybe the people of South Sudan should consider the three options, the three regions. That's in our paper.
Well, you have taken us actually to the next step in our discussion here. Listeners to Radio Mirai, this is me, Gabriel Joseph Shadar, and I'm discussing the challenges and opportunities for managing diversity in South Sudan through federal system. And with me in the studio are Dr. Luca Byung Deng from the Center for Peace and Development Studies, University of Juba, Dr. Douglas Johnson from the Rift Valley Institute, and Dr. John Young, author and researcher, and also Mr. Peter Justin Hakim from the African Studies Center in the Netherlands. Dr. Douglas, the paper of Peter has brought up the challenges. Even before we implement federalism, there is division and all these kind of things. So if at all any system of governance should be implemented through federalism, what is for it for the people here?
Okay. Yeah. I'm interested that Peter has raised the issue of the three so-called greaters. They keep on coming back. And one of the things that I think is important to recognize from the way in which the greaters were constructed is that very often a decision was made that neighboring peoples who were in conflict were better administrated under the same administration, under the same provincial administration, rather than divided between provinces. And so if you look at the history of the way in which the three provinces were constructed, very often districts would be hived off from one and given to another, or there would be a reamalgamation just in specifically to minimize the possibility of conflict and to increase the possibility of resolving conflicts. Now, it didn't always work and it wasn't always consistent, and there are always different ways of putting systems together. But your legacy, of course, is not just the three provinces. Your legacy is what was created through native administration, through the creation of chiefs' courts and the use of customary law. And every government, every administration since independence has tried to impose itself or base its local administration on what used to be called native administration. And of course, each area is different. The Zandi, old Zandi kingdoms are quite different from the Nuer or the Dinka chiefs' courts. But those were the building blocks of administration. Now, in some ways, you've got two levels of potential federalism. You can have the greater administrative constructs, whether you go back to the three greaters or in some other way, you have a civil administration that is contained within a larger province or state. And within that, you have what is, in effect, a kind of ethnic federalism. Many of the counties right now are based on the idea of containing a major ethnic group. They're not all homogeneous. There has been a lot of population redistribution in South Sudan since 1956, but also especially because of the war. You now have groups of people in South Sudan who were not originally South Sudanese, but who are contributing to the economy in various ways. There is the possibility, therefore, of thinking in terms of a bigger structure of civil administration that is managing the substructure of a kind of pseudo ethnic federalism. Mm. What I'm trying to say is this, is that there are different roles of different levels of government.
Mm-hmm.
There is a role for the central government, and that seems to me to be missing in the current debate.
Yeah.
There is a role for the state government, which is extremely important for the management of the sub-ethnic federalism that is already existing in South Sudan through the formation of the counties.
Yeah.
If you don't have that backup, if you don't have that management at the state level, then the local level isn't going to be very effective.
Yeah. I think I give Dr. Luca the chance also to respond and also add some of the points, and also John and also Peter. What do you say here? Dr. Douglas is bringing up the issue of the roles that should be played by this level or that level, given the history that people now have in their mind, this native administration, local administration, whatever you call it, that was driven by external factors. But now we are in a different setup altogether, and the question is, what drives this system? Is driven by what? Is it driven by demands? Is it driven by efficiency factors? Is it driven by viability? What is it?
Yeah, I think I just want to highlight two things. One, it is the context, the specificity of South Sudan. South Sudan is unique. We cannot copy anything from, so we are unique. But I think our strength depends on our traditional structure. Because this is the system, and I just want to build up on what Douglas said.
Mm.
Because the traditional authority, this is the thing, it happened by the way we managed to navigate as a communities until we are where we are now. And this system we established before the coming of foreigners. And it is very important for us to recognize as our basis, our traditional structure. This is ours. It's very unique to South Sudan. And I think this is the basis upon which we will be discussing about what type of a system that can really strengthen that system at the local level.
For your argument is starting from the bottom.
The bottom.
Yeah.
So, but that is the basis. For me, and that's why it has been found, actually, by United Nations Commission, Economic Commission for Africa, the resilience of the traditional authorities over time. It's not only with the colonial system, but even with this extractive regime that came. And actually, South Sudan is a good example. So let us start from there. And I think the most important thing, the second thing is that that system, whatever federalism, it must deliver at that level of the traditional level. And I think I concur, because I made analysis in my paper, that actually we have the level of government, we have this level of state, which is a territorial federalism.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment you move to the county, then it's clearly ethnic federalism. But even when you go to the Payam and Buma, it's subsection of this bigger ethnic group. And I think what real debate, and I want to take on the issues of Justin, the issue of boundaries. The problem of boundaries is that the traditional definition of boundaries are so flexible, are quite inclusive, are not specified. And that is the issue. The moment you bring in the narrative of these modern boundaries, of which you want to make boundaries along ethnic line, then becomes a problem. And then when you come, really I have a problem with this layer of government, whether it's three region or ten states.
Mm.
Is it possible for us really to these leakages, because these level are actually a burden. Sometimes are not even linked to a specific narrative that can define them. What is Eastern? What is Equatoria? What is Bargazal? What is Upper Nile? But I think the more you move low to the lower level, this is where you see the identity. You can really identify yourself with that. So I agree with the fact that let us focus on that system that can really strengthen our traditional institution.
So your argument is based on administration more, or maybe politically more than any other factors.
No, because the moment you talk about the devolving the powers, I'm looking at three things: administrative, political, and economic, physical.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ethiopia now. I mean, John Young will talk about this one. Why is Ethiopia so powerful now? It is because they moved these powers to that level.
To that level. But Dr. Douglas was saying that he's afraid that a federal system in the way people are thinking at the moment will make people not even crossing boundaries, local boundaries easily, and even come here, somebody come from Barghazal and find a job in Equatoria. That will be very difficult.
But that's why we are saying, I think, let us pick up what John Young said.
Yeah.
By the way, these communities, by naturally, they have been coexisting.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fact. It is the way we politicize that existence. That's the problem.
Okay.
And
Yes, Dr. John Young, what do you add to this argument here, given your experience and your study of the Ethiopian federal system?
Actually, I think there's a remarkable level of agreement among us academics who are usually fighting with one another, but I completely agree with my colleagues on the importance of the traditional authorities. I think they've become even more important after the breakdown of civil order in the country, and where the modern elites have gone a long way to discrediting themselves, and I think that's part of the attraction of going back to looking at these traditional forms of governance. But that, of course, was not the approach in Ethiopia at all. It was very much a modern-based system where, generally in the highland areas, the traditional authorities were basically pushed out completely.
Mm-hmm.
The Ethiopians tried to do that in the lowland areas. They weren't successful. Mm-hmm. And increasingly, because they lacked legitimacy in the lowland areas, they've had to give an increasing role to the traditional authorities. So I think that's important for the South Sudanese to learn that. The other crucial lesson here with respect to Ethiopia was that Ethiopia didn't follow a Western script when they were looking for models of governance. I think South Sudan made a big mistake by basically taking on board an entire Western kind of model and system of governance. Those systems have been under challenged or collapsed all over Africa. There was a lot of experience which suggested they weren't going to work in South Sudan, and they didn't.
Dr. Douglas also was saying he's afraid that an imposed system of governance, a federal system, that is not driven by the way the Ethiopian did it, their own local way of thinking, might really not be good for the people because it is not internalized. What do you think?
Well, the point of the Ethiopian system, again, the lesson to be drawn is it was their system. Mm. It was based on an analysis of their society.
So the challenge for South Sudanese now is to think their own way.
Yes, exactly, to think their own way and to look very critically at these kind of Western models and somehow think they're superior because supposedly they work in the West under radically different conditions.
Mm.
You have to look at your own society, which is not to say that you can't learn from a lot of international experience. You should certainly look at that. But that's not going to give you something which is appropriate and is going to work in the very unique circumstances of South Sudan.
So you're proposing trial and error
approach? No, I'm not providing. I'm suggesting to do some of the things which haven't been done, which is engage the people out there, understand what systems of governance they already have, look at ways you can take those systems of governance, modernize them if necessary. There's certainly some very negative features about traditional governance, but that is a very good starting point.
Yeah.
But the political elites in this country have to engage the local people. This is something they've been very, very poor at doing, and I think that has led in many ways directly to the conflict that the country is experiencing right now.
Peter, Justin, given what has been said up to now, is it really these opportunities or these options, are they really very complicated for the people of South Sudan? And what is being, what options that the options that are available, and you have said some of them, are they easy to overcome?
I think I can build on the last point John Young talked about, about the systems of federalism or the types which could be seen. So, like in our paper, we argued that there is no fit all model of federalism. It needs to be contextualized to specific situations. So if we look at our case in South Sudan, what is the problem? What is it that the people need? And like in our paper, actually, we focus one of the issues is about land issues. And we argue that a federal system that can contribute to land reform could be a way forward. And we try to relate that, for example, to the conflict around borders or to the claims around, for example, which community should own which piece of land. And the sum of this actually goes back to the contradictory and the many policies that we have been having. As you are aware, for example, it was the 1970 Unregistered Land Act which was the overriding rule, and which greatly actually contributed to the resistance against the system in Khartoum, in which the state owns most parts of South Sudan, which actually takes us back to the land belongs to the community, or as a way of getting back. Then again, so over time, actually, with the creation of the governance structures we talked about, you see that land is becoming an issue. And if, like in our paper also, we argue that if you critically look at it, some of the conflicts which are taking ethnic lines, which are seen to be between ethnic groups, in fact, land plays a very big role. And then it's not belonging to an ethnic group that is the problem causing conflict, but sometimes elites try to manipulate the ethnic identity to be able, for example, to claim that, okay, this area belongs to us. And there are a number of examples, like you correctly said, okay, our work we did mainly in Central Equatoria, and take, for example, Greater Equatoria, if I can use that word, Greater Equatoria, before, for example, the current system of governance. And you try to see, for example, how communities were, to what extent communities were trying to fight in relation to which community owns which part of land. And then you try to relate it to the current system where we have Payam, Boma, and County. And if you can take it slightly to the 2010 elections, for example, where politicians are trying to demarcate their borders so that they can get their votes. So actually, these are some of the complexities.
Well, listeners, Radio Mirai, you are listening to Roundtable Debate with me, Gabriel Joseph Shadar, and I have a panel of experts, Dr. Luca Byung-Deng and Dr. Douglas Johnson and Dr. John Young and Mr. Peter Justin. With the point from Peter Justin, I move now to the issue of relationship in the federal system. There is the deception of power, devolution of power, there is a sharing of resources, there is administration, there is issue of infrastructure, all these kind of things. And your work in Jonglei, it gives an interesting example, because conflict erupted again in Jonglei seriously after the signing of the CPA. And people wonder, what is it? Why are we struggling in one state and we have demarcations, we have this and thing, and the role of the elites in managing these relationships? What can you say, Dr. Douglas?
Well, first of all, Jonglei was a state during the Civil War which had a high level of multiple militias with varying loyalties,
affiliations,
and sort of several defections to and from, and quite a lot of weapons, and quite a lot of suspicion. And I think one of the failures of the interim period was the refusal to engage in community reconciliation. Not only community reconciliation, there was a real need for the SPLM and the SPLA to be involved in reconciliation with the civilian population, probably more so in Jonglei than in any other part of South Sudan. And I think that's the fundamental problem that helped to for the escalation of the intercommunal fighting in Jonglei. Now, it is no accident that the main intercommunal fighting was between groups which were ranged against each other during the Civil War as being either part of the government or part of one or other faction of the SPLA. But let's go back a little bit. I would just want to make a correction, I think, to the way in which we've been talking about traditional authorities. I don't like the term because it gives the feeling that there has been a sort of centuries-long role, whereas what we're talking about is something that has been created by government,
yes,
and has been managed by government and has has evolved as a result of the relation between different groups of authority at the local level and different governments. I mean, there's a huge difference between, for instance, the way in which a man like, say, Deng Majok in Abyei negotiated with a succession of governments to increase his importance and his position within local administration, and also a great difference between what a Zandi chief would expect from his subjects and a Morley chief or a Dinka or Nuer chief. Zhongli. If you look at the records that I managed to bring back from Zhongli in the 1980s for the National Archive here in Jumba, we've got records of intertribal meetings between Morley and Nuer, Morley and Dinka, how small conflicts got resolved through these intertribal meetings. You now have a situation where there's been massive killing on both sides, real brutality. Abductions on an unprecedented scale, and a confused government, basically, of how to approach this. Who in the government has been involved in mobilizing one group or another? Have we got to the point where the traditional, the customary structures that used to contain small conflicts before they escalated, have we got to the point where these are no longer possible in dealing with the series of escalations and abuses that have happened? I think that there is the possibility that we can harness the structures and the institutions that native administration had, but it's got to be backed up by a real commitment from the government.
Yeah, yeah.
Both at the state and at the national level for reconciliation and restitution. But there is a role for the local institutions, because that's what people start with, and well, that's what they understand.
Yeah.
And what they have been missing is the active involvement of administration, of civil administration, in backing up these institutions.
Yeah.
I mean, the if you look at what happened at Woodleat in 1999 during the war, when chiefs from the Nuer area and chiefs from the Dinka area met in a neutral space that was kept open for them by one of the combatants. And they worked, you know, they argued, they accused each other, they issued their, told, detailed their grievances, not just the chiefs but common people, and then came up with a resolution. Now, that was the success of Woonleet. The failure of Woonleet was that those resolutions were not implemented by the powers that should have done so. So there is, you know, there's a lesson. There is a way in which we can go forward, and the reason why that wasn't entirely successful was the lack of will from the higher authorities.
Mm-hmm. And this is the relationship that should really govern any future federal system, if
yes.
any. Yeah, Dr. Luca, quickly, elites. And you are supposed to be one of the elites. And you have been so much accused in every literature we are reading that elites have been exploiting the good heart and good willingness and all this and simplicity and the ignorance of the people to divert them from the real issues and involve them in petty and local and contemporary issues rather than seeing the bigger picture. So how will the elite have to adapt in managing a federal system in a way that will not create the situations like we have seen in Equatoria, for example?
Yeah, I think our own analysis for conflict, usually elites, they do matter. But I think this will be a simplification of the what is facing South Sudan or Africa generally, because we are not that different from other countries. Elites are elites. But what makes the elites to contribute differently in different countries? That's the biggest question. And I come to the issue of the issues of institutions. And always, because I feel it is this institution that can condition the elites to bring the public good. Mm. Because if you are becoming accountable, the institutions are in such a way, shake and balance, making you, exposing you, making you accountable. That is it. That is the issue. Because you cannot say the solution for the problem of South Sudan now is to get rid of elites. But it's rather...
we want you to change.
It's rather,
change your mind.
The elites could be changed through the institutions.
Yeah.
And that is the entry point. Mm. But let me come to the issue of federalism. But it is true. How can we make these institutions to make sure that they can deliver at the local level, mm-hmm. the local institution? How can we make this the system of government to deny the elite to politicize these institutions at lower level, like what Peter said? Because then that's the challenge we are seeing. For example, when we talk about the federal system or decentralized system, you see the transfer becoming is the politics about how much can you transfer from Juba to the state. That debate, maybe the state got it. But the problem is how much you can transfer from a state to the local government.
Mm.
And you could see clearly the state are making a problem with the central government, but in fact they have not been delivering much to the local government.
Absolutely.
And that is the level that we believe that it is very important. That's why for the elites to be denied that one, for the elites to have political will through the institutions and through arrangement to make sure that these resources to get down to the local government.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the debate. And for the elites to see their interest, and I think somebody is presenting a paper, if elites they believe that the central system, the federal system or decentralized system will be against them, they will definitely fight in order not to happen.
Yeah. The argument against the elite is that they have a tendency of patronage.
That's true.
Clientelism.
Mm.
And many are saying they don't have the capacity, they don't have the experience, and they don't even want to learn. So how will you implement a federal system that requires a lot of experience, a lot of resilience, strong management, even at the lowest level, and you don't have it? If you go to states now, you have even people who left school at primary aid and secondary school, whatever, and then given big jobs, and now you don't have federal system. When you have it, you have this challenge. How will you go about that?
You know, one of the things, sometimes we underrate how much capacity we have as South Sudanese. Maybe the challenge is whether we are, how best we can mobilize the people, the right people who can be. For example, Juba University, we graduated not less than 3,000 just recently. If you look around, even in the neighboring countries, we have one of the very bright people actually graduating from these universities. If you go to the diaspora, it's just unbelievable. So I think the whole lot, I'm coming back to this issue of the challenge that we don't have capacity. So the fact for us is better that we have a centralized system is not an argument that can help us. And the argument that we don't have the capacity at the lower, for example, if we today, we decided as a policy to say a teacher and a nurse, those are the people working at this level, are highly motivated, even paid higher than these people in central government.
Mm.
You'll see, it's about policies. Everybody will be shifting, will be going to the...
So you will overcome that through policies.
Yeah.
John Young, what can you add, given your experience with the Ethiopian way of things?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to clarify things at this conference. This conference wasn't there. The rationale for the conference wasn't to advocate federalism.
Yeah,
that wasn't what we were there for.
But if it is proposed...
And there's some people certainly against federalism, and they have every right to take that kind of view. Federalism is a means to solve some problems.
Yeah.
It doesn't solve...
Every problem.
It doesn't really solve any problems as such at all. Capacity, just to disagree a bit with Dr. Luca, I think capacity is a problem at the local level. And again, to refer to Ethiopia, that was very much understood, and they responded to it in two ways. One, the way they responded it to was to do serious investigations of the character and the components of local society to know what was actually there. And the second, and which has been very successful, is to establish a civil service college, which was specifically directed to meet the needs of the local community. So those are rather two practical ways of addressing that problem of capacity, because it's definitely there.
Mm-hmm. You have given some of the best practices. I think they will pick up on those things and apply it here. Peter, Justin, what do you add? And also, Dr. Douglas, you are free to add what I've been arguing with here with Dr. Luca.
In relation to the elite, again, I first of all agree with Dr. Luca that that idea of being under capacity or not well in with the less capacity, I don't agree on that. You know, sometimes capacity on what? So yeah. Depending on the level, elites at the lower level.
But you cannot say a graduate, you bring a graduate from a university and you put him into a government system directly and you expect him to deliver.
Of course, that's why we talk of, for example, depending on the specific context. Mm. And you talk of, okay, elite, they will always come in and try to manipulate things. But then for me, the right question is, why are they doing it? Mm. They are, in most cases, doing in reaction to something.
Yeah.
Or to manipulate specific situations. So if we take our examples, for example, and again, like my specialization on land, I always try to give examples based on land. First of all, if we go to the border issues again, which I've talked about, which is my contribution actually to this conference, why is it that there is confusion on where borders should be? And why is it that, for example, elites are using ethnic? Simply because, first of all, we've got very unclear policies.
Yeah, you don't have policies. Yeah,
in fact, we don't have policies.
That means the backup from the civil administration is not
exactly
there.
Yeah, and we have a land act which is very contradicting in many aspects. So, those who are feeling that they are having grievances with a certain level of the government, then they try to manipulate this situation or trying to make use of the weaker policies to push their own agenda. And unfortunately, and then the ethnic factor seems to be playing a very big role here.
So it should be an institution given, institution driven way of doing things, not to leave things for opportunity or for chances. Dr. Douglas.
Well, I have too many friends in the so-called elite to stop trashing them publicly. And I admire many of them for what they're trying to do. And I think that there is an untapped capacity in the diaspora. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I find most hopeful about this country is those in the diaspora who've come back who do not care to be given a government job, but want to do something else, like build a school and make sure that the teachers are paid and bring teachers in even if they're coming from another country. Or to build up the local economy in trade and things like that. Those are issues that are not going to be solved necessarily by a new system of government. I don't feel that I am capable of advocating or prescribing what would be the best solution. I think that what we will be getting out of soon in South Sudan is the kind of post-war sense of entitlement, that people felt that they were entitled to a job, to a salary, to access to resources because they had been part of the struggle. And I think one of the problems of the current conflict is the way in which certain leaders, and I will not make any names, built on this sense of entitlement in their own communities. That I don't see as being possible as of continuing once the current civil war somehow comes to an end. And I think South Sudan really has to make an effort to build on the capacity of all of its citizens, including the people who are living abroad, who obviously are a little bit worried about returning. And they are the ones, I think, who can bring in new experience, new expertise. Now, they're not the only ones, and I think that there are a lot of people within South Sudan. So there has to be a kind of a readjustment of the, who It's not so much who can benefit, but who will benefit the country.
Yeah.
And that will take a long time. I mean,
I'd like to go back and have another bash at the elites, I think. Because I think in the present circumstances where the country is facing a crisis, in many ways that lies at the doors of the elites. And to provide a little bit of context with respect to the SPLM, the SPLA, they, in the course of their struggle, they consciously made a decision not to develop institutions, not to develop local systems of governance. And then when they came to power, of course, they didn't really have much experience. I mean, all those years in the bush from 1983, they didn't learn much about actual governance. Again, the difference in Ethiopia was there was a concentration on building institutions. It had an altruistic impact in the sense that they were trying to bring development, but to be clear, it was about exerting their authority of having control over people. But it ended up working quite well in terms of governance. So now I think there's a widespread agreement that the difficulty in South Sudan is this weak or lack of institutions. Well, it's very much a product of the history of the SPLA.
Yeah.
I think there's a problem of looking at federalism and these problems of governance as technical problems. Mm-hmm. And if you can overcome the technical problems, if you can just rejig the thing properly, then it's all going to work.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the case. Mm. And again, the Ethiopian model was basically, the revolutionary model was because they didn't have external support. Mm. I mean, I've always thought that the major weakness of the SPLA was they had enormous external support, and as a result, they didn't have to turn to the people. The Ethiopians had almost no international support. Yeah. They had to turn to the people, and shouting slogans at the people doesn't work. Mm. People aren't stupid. What they had to do was provide basic services. So as you mentioned, education, but they were also very good at health within the limited resources they had. But again, it had a particular political objective of a way of mobilizing people and carrying forward their revolution.
Yeah. Thank you very much, John Young. I come to the concluding remarks in this debate. I ask you to give your concluding remark about all these opportunities and challenges for a federal system. What exactly is the way ahead now, if given that we have agreed on, or the warring parties have agreed, or stakeholders have agreed on a federal system to govern the South Sudan? 2-3 points for each of you. I start with Dr. Luka Byong.
First, we in the University of Juba Center for Peace, we want to start with this debate. What is it exactly? This is the question you asked. And I think from this, we are going to widen the debate, but make it an academic thing, but also having a policy implication. And what is coming out clearly, it is more of how can we make difference at the local level and the content. It is rhetoric of whether federalism, it doesn't mean anything to the people of Southern Sudan, and let it has to produce results at the community level. And I think this is the most important point. Secondly, whether our local institutions are so important. And I think it is very important while we're debating this one, what can we do to make these institutions really effective and delivering and functioning? The third, I agree with you, for these institutions to function, it is important to look at what can we do at that level to have the right capacity at that level, to attract the right capacity to the local level. And that's why in Juba University now we have established a school of public service. And the idea is to produce people who are tailored to really to function at that level. It's not a very academic thing. It's a short course. There is a master's degree. But we want to produce people who can really be able to deliver at that and to be available at that those institutions at the local level.
Thank you. John Young?
Well, I've just been fighting my way through the IGAD peace agreement, a very technical jargon and everything else. And, of course, there's only, I think, one or two very passing references to federalism. What I'm concerned is that this has always been an elite-driven peace process. That's the way IGAD organized the whole process. I'm concerned that we're going to see elites trading things off to achieve their particular ends, and this broader interest in federalism or broader interest in governance is going to be lost on the people. This is a process which is very clearly designed to keep the people out of the peace process. So I'm very concerned about that. That's why actually I'm here at this conference, because I think what Dr. Luca and some other people are doing in the center is very, very valuable. It has to be taken an awful lot farther to engage a much bigger section of the South Sudanese population so they can take up these issues and try to inject their views on the elites.
Thank you. Peter Justin?
Actually, the way I look at this debate on federalism is important in a sense that, like, okay, as a researcher, I've been talking to people. For example, as you know, when the recent debate on federalism started, that had resulted to divisions not only between government institutions, but also at the local level, among people, communities. But then what actually became very interesting is, for example, what do people mean when they say they support or oppose federalism? Yeah. So actually, I think that this debate is very important in a sense that at least it will help enlighten people about what federalism is, what is it intended to do, and to what extent is it relevant or not relevant to our society, for example. This way, and then I think it can be able to give the people of South Sudan informed decision about whether federalism or which other system of governance which they think can contribute in addressing the issues of South Sudan. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's really a very good initiative, and the debate can contribute a lot on that.
Yeah. Dr. Douglas, I would like you to add something on the political setup and the way ahead for that.
Okay. Are you trying to get me deported? I'm going home tomorrow anyway.
Yeah, no problem.
First of all, I would just like to say I don't think that we can say that there has been a general agreement about federalism and that this is the way forward. There has been a discussion between warring parties, and I think neither one of the warring parties has would agree with the other parties to a definition of federalism. I agree with Peter. If there is going to be any sort of reform in South Sudan in governance, it has to be a much wider debate. It has to be a national debate. It has to involve more people than are currently being involved. Second of all, I think one of the things that the debate must focus on, which it isn't right now, is what is the role of the central government? What are the national policies and the national institutions that should be the responsibility of the central government? Things maybe as mundane as roads.
Yeah.
Or electrification, bringing power to the rural areas. These are roles, these might be the sort of role that a national government takes on. There has to be a clear idea of what is the role of the national government, what are the type of national institutions we want that are going to be part of the building of the nation. And then we must then look at what we've got. There is the general assumption South Sudan doesn't have assets. It does have experience. It does have experience in local government. It does have experience in state government. It does have people who can bring their experience to it. They have to look at what can these different levels of government do. Chiefs can't provide schools or dispensaries. State governments can. Where is the weakness in each of these institutions? What can they do? What can't they do? What do they need to be able to do what they do better? And I think that these are all things that have to be examined. Part of a national debate has to be whether people understand what they all mean by federalism and what would it mean for South Sudan, and what would it mean both at the national level, at whatever state level is created, and at the local level.
Thank you very much, Dr. Douglas Johnson, fellow of the Rift Valley Institute, and Dr. Luca Byung-Deng, director of the Center for Peace and Development Studies, University of Cuba, and Dr. John Young, author and researcher, and Mr. Peter Justin Hakim, researcher at the African Studies Center in the Netherlands. Thanks for being on Mirai Roundtable with me, Gabriel Joseph Shadar. We have open debate on options for governance in South Sudan. Your questions, your remarks will be taken also for another debate. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you.
You are listening to The Roundtable with Gabriel Joseph Shadar. Debating the big issues. The Roundtable. About the nation, across the nation. Radio Mirai.